The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. So, I was out working in a friend's garden the other day, and it struck me that we haven't done a show about weed in a while. Hanan Abramovich, PhD, is director of the Office of Cannabis Science and Surveillance at Health Canada.
Really happy and excited to be here and to talk to you over the next 10 minutes about cannabis legalization regulation in Canada, a little bit of the policy context, policy landscape, the framework that we built, how it's going, and some of the bumps in research that we've faced and how we fix that, and some next steps. So essentially, we can start with the Cannabis Act, but maybe we can start maybe a little bit before the Cannabis Act came into force in 2018. And essentially in 2015, 2016, we had a new government that came, that was elected in Canada. It was a Liberal government. And one of their platform commitments was to legalize and regulate cannabis. And there were a number of reasons for that. Two of them are actually listed right here. And so one of the things that we were aware of is that there was a pretty high rate of cannabis use in Canada, both among the youth and young adults. The statistics are listed below. We had about 1 in 5 15 to 19 year olds who said they used cannabis at least once in the last year, and about 1 in 3 20 to 24 year olds who said they used cannabis in the last year. That, of course, can mean anything from a couple of puffs to daily or near daily use. But still, it was a pretty high prevalence of cannabis use generally in Canada. And importantly, as well, is that the cannabis that youth and everyone else was using, except for individuals sourcing for medical purposes in certain situations, that cannabis came from the illicit or illegal market, where there's no quality control. You don't know what you're getting. You don't know the potency. You don't know if there's contaminants. And you have to interact with the illicit market. And on that note, the illegal or illicit market for cannabis in Canada was pretty substantial. An estimate, I think, back in the Q3 of 2018 was about $6 billion in the illegal market cap for cannabis, which is pretty substantial. And we had tens of thousands of police-reported offenses that were cannabis-related under the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act. So these and other considerations were the reason why we had a mandate to legalize and regulate cannabis in Canada. And in 2018... the Cannabis Act, as I mentioned, came into force on October 17th of that year. And basically, the Cannabis Act created a federal control framework designed to do a number of things, which I'll talk about in a minute. But really importantly, the Act was focused on two key principles, public health, protecting public health, and protecting public safety. And the means by which the Act would do that is as follows. It would restrict youth from accessing cannabis. So any youth under the age of 18 are prohibited from accessing cannabis legally in Canada. And there are a suite of both legislative and regulatory provisions to prevent young people from advertising, cannabis advertising, promotional activities, and enticements to use cannabis. There's also a possession limit in Canada where adults of legal age are limited in possessing up to 30 grams or equivalent of legal cannabis products in public. And certain limits around home cultivation of 4 plants per residence. The Cannabis Act also paved the way or created essentially a legal cannabis industry that is highly regulated by the federal government and specifically specific activities by those license holders, license producers are regulated through issuance of federal licenses. And that includes activities related to production, cultivation, processing, research, analytical testing, and others. The Act also authorizes provinces and territories in Canada to distribute and sell. So the federal government doesn't regulate distribution and sale. It regulates production, cultivation, and processing. So provinces and territories are the ones that distribute and sell cannabis in Canada. At the same time, the legal supply chain for cannabis is strictly regulated through a variety of regulations and legislation to ensure a quality-controlled supply of legal cannabis. And the regulations establish pretty strict product quality and testing requirements. And lastly, there are a suite of legislation regulations around cannabis-related offenses, with some carrying serious penalties, for example, for selling cannabis to youth. So as I mentioned a moment ago, you know, Canada is a federation. We have a federal government. We have 10 provinces and 3 territories. And those provinces and territories and local governments, municipal governments, for example, have their own roles and responsibilities in this space. And they have, for example, they have the flexibility to establish more stringent controls on access to a certain degree. So, for example, they can increase the minimum age of cannabis access to beyond the age of 18, but they can't lower it below the age of 18. Conversely, they can lower the possession limit below 30 grams, but they can't increase the possession limit above 30 grams. They also have other roles and responsibilities and powers. They can restrict places in which cannabis can be consumed. They can set about additional limits on promotion and advertising. They can promote additional fact-based health and safety information for their constituents, for consumers, and they can control zoning, public consumption, and create bylaws around cannabis consumption within their jurisdictions. So what does the picture look like in Canada from coast to coast to coast? What we see is essentially a robust legal supply system for cannabis across the country, but we do see a mix of both different ages of access to cannabis. So, for example, Quebec has a legal age of access of 21, whereas other provinces have an age of 19 and others have an age of 18. There is a mix of different retail models. Some provinces, like Quebec, again, has chosen an entirely public model, whereas others, like BC, have a hybrid model of both public and private retail sales, and other provinces and territories have chosen an entirely private retail framework. So in terms of, I'm going to skip now to early results. One thing I just want you to keep in mind is, A, I don't have time to go through a lot of data and graphs, so it's going to be really quick and condensed. And two, it's only been 4.5 years since legalization and regulation of cannabis. And in Canada, legalization regulation happened in two phases. There was phase one in 2018 that legalized dried cannabis and cannabis oil for oral ingestion, as well as cannabis plants and cannabis seeds. Phase two of legalization happened a year later, and that enabled access to a legal source of edibles, vape products, other types of extracts, and topicals. So you kind of have to keep that in mind in terms of the way that legalization was rolled out. It's still very early days. And on top of that, we also had a COVID pandemic, as everybody is aware. And that can also have shifted or changed or influenced some of the data that we've collected on the impacts of legalization regulation of cannabis. So what does the data tell us? It tells us a few things. It tells us that the rate of cannabis use among youth and the age of initiation has not changed, which is good. Cannabis use still remains high among youth and young adults that are age 16 to 24 and in older age groups. We've also know that what we've seen is that there's been an overall increase in cannabis use amongst the general population, but youth rates of use have not followed that upward trend, similar to what Jillian showed in her data a few moments ago. Overall, there has not been a change in the proportion of daily or near daily consumers among those who've used in the past year. However, the prevalence of daily and almost daily use is highest among young adults. So that still is a concern, because even though the youngest individuals, teenagers are most vulnerable to the effects of the harms of cannabis, young adults, the brains of young adults are still developing, and cannabis use during that time can still pose a risk to health and safety. One of the surprises, let's say, that we've found in the course of legalization and regulation of cannabis is that cannabis poisonings from accidental ingestion of edible cannabis have increased, and notably among children under the age of 5. And smoking cannabis still remains the most common method of use, but we have seen a steady decline both in the general population and in youth over the last few years, while ingestion, so the use of edibles, has increased in both sets of populations, both in the general population and amongst youth, and vaping of cannabis has also increased among youth. In terms of risk perceptions, a couple of things. One is that relative to where we started in 2018, Canadians who both said that they used cannabis in the past year or who have never used cannabis reported being aware or more aware of the health and safety risks of cannabis use. So that's a good finding, because that means that our public education awareness activities are working and that we are communicating the health and safety risks of cannabis, and that individuals are aware and have heard of these safety risks. Nevertheless, cannabis is still viewed as having less risk than alcohol, tobacco, and e-cigarettes. and among youth, about 1 in 10 students in grades 7 to 12 said that there was no risk associated with regular cannabis use, and that means that we might need to do a bit more public education and awareness in that population. In terms of the displacement of the illicit market, what we have, the takeaway from this slide, it's a busy slide, there's lots going on, but basically the takeaway is we've seen a steady and significant decline in sales from the illicit market and in the number of Canadians purchasing from the illicit market, and a significant and steady increase in Canadians purchasing from the legal market, both for medical and non-medical purposes, to the point now where about 85% of current consumers say that they buy at least some of their cannabis from legal sources. So that is, you know, we were never expecting an entire conversion of the whole market overnight. We know this is something that's going to take a number of years to achieve, but the progress so far has been really remarkable and is very, very encouraging. In terms of monitoring emerging risks, we have a number of tools in our toolbox to respond to a variety of different risks. I'm not going to go through all of these because I don't have the time, but we do consistently monitor and review a number of different sources of information and data to understand what is happening in Canada with respect to legalization regulation, to understand the public health impacts of this initiative, and to make any changes and respond accordingly to any signals that we've noticed. So whether that comes from information from federal license holders through notices of new cannabis products, whether it comes from adverse reaction reports that we receive, data from poison centers, data from our population surveys, the peer-reviewed literature or research conducted both at Health Canada and with partners, we take it all in and synthesize that information and share it with our policymakers in order to help inform a variety of different actions at Health Canada. Before my concluding slide, I'm just going to spend a couple of seconds just talking about some challenges that we face with cannabis clinical research in Canada. So despite legalizing and regulating cannabis and essentially allowing any Canadian of legal age to go to a store, a legal store, purchase a cannabis product or many cannabis products and use those products, at home, anywhere else, all the time, anytime, essentially a researcher wanting to do a clinical study of that product in Canada could not do it. And there's a number of different reasons. I don't have time to get into them, but that was a major roadblock to clinical research on cannabis in Canada and an unintended consequence of legalization. And so we fixed that problem in December of 2022, so just last December. And we did that by amending existing cannabis regulations to create a new risk-based framework specifically dedicated to researching non-therapeutic use or non-therapeutic effects of cannabis. And that essentially exempts that research from the clinical trial requirements under our food and drug regulations. And we define NTRC, non-therapeutic research on cannabis, as interventional non-therapeutic studies with cannabis that are regulated entirely under our act and regulations. And the simple aim of this new framework is to essentially generate knowledge on cannabis and its non-therapeutic effects with real-world products that Canadians are consuming from the legal market, and to use that data, to use that knowledge to help inform public health and safety measures, public education and policy, and also to enable companies developing these products to further their research and development activities around these products. Individuals or entities who still want to do clinical trials with cannabis for medical purposes can still do that under the existing food and drug regulations. So then just concluding, what's next? Basically, a few things. One is that we're going to continue to regulate and oversee the legal supply chain. Of course, this is our mandate, and we'll continue to do that. We're going to continue to educate the public and raise the public's awareness of the harms, risks, and also therapeutic effects and benefits of cannabis. Make them aware of the issue of pediatric poisonings and what to do to help prevent those incidents from happening. Focus on preventing drug-impaired driving, continue to support guidance on lower risk use and unique risks associated with certain types of cannabis products. We're going to continue to conduct research, monitoring, and surveillance through a variety of means, whether that's national cannabis surveys, whether it is in vitro, in vivo, and other types of research to better understand the health and safety risks of the variety of cannabis products we have on the market, or whether it's to administer the new NTRC framework, as I mentioned a moment ago. And of course, we are engaged in a legislative review of the Cannabis Act. So our act mandates that a review of the legislation has to start 3 years after the coming into force. And that legislative review got underway last fall, in fall 2022, and we expect a report tabled in Parliament by spring of 2024.
That was Hannah Abramovich, PhD, Director of the Office of Cannabis Science and Surveillance at Health Canada, speaking at the 2023 NIDA International Forum on the topic of international cannabis policy and implications for research. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Ivana Obradovic is Deputy Director of the French Monitoring Center for Drugs and Drug Addiction.
As you know, is in the EU, few countries consider the option of regulating cannabis for recreational use. Up to this point, only five member states out of 27 and Switzerland are introducing or planning to introduce new approaches to regulate cannabis. That is Czechia, Germany, Luxembourg, Malta, and the Netherlands. Over the last 20 years, the general trend in national laws in Europe has been decriminalization, except in France, which appears as one of the most conservative countries currently. So in just a few minutes, I'll try to provide some insight into the French situation. I should mention first that we do not take any funding from any industry. So a quick overview of what we do at OFDT. We are a nonprofit public interest group with a scientific mission. It was created 30 years ago by government policymakers in need of reliable information on drug use and all phenomena related to drugs, including drug supply and public policy. Our role is to provide a scientific perspective on drug issues to support decision-making and public debate in France. We are certified as the French focal point of the EMCDDA, the European Monitoring Center for Drugs and Drug Addiction, which is located in Lisbon. And we have set out three principles to guarantee the quality and credibility of our expert reviews. That is transparency, independence, and impartiality. So that means OFDT takes no formal position for or against legalization. Our institutional scientific expertise is collective in nature. Our team of experts relies on different disciplinary approaches, including epidemiology and social science. And our independence is guaranteed by a scientific advisory council, including 20 experts or academics from different fields. And of course, all our publications are available online. So where are we in terms of cannabis use patterns? I'll start with a European overview. As you can see here, among young adults, almost one in five used cannabis in the last year, with significant national differences. France has one of the highest levels of cannabis use in Europe, together with the Netherlands, Italy, Spain, and Croatia. Until recently, France had the top prevalence among adolescents, but a decreasing trend has prevailed in the last decade, especially among youth. You can see here the results of our national survey based on a representative sample of 17-year-old adolescents with the levels of lifetime use, past month use, and regular use, at least 10 times in the past month. There's a clear trend of declining cannabis use since 2014. Some in France argue that this could be a positive outcome of prohibition. Please don't smile. And there is no such evidence, especially as many minors in France don't even know cannabis is prohibited. And conspicuously, this is one of the dimensions of the French paradox. Cannabis is widely available among youth and perceived by minors as very accessible, despite strong legal restrictions. Prohibition of cannabis has been in place since 1970. It's forbidden to use, possess, produce, import, and sell recreational cannabis containing THC. This legal framework was designed after the protests of May 1968 in order to reinforce social control over young people. This framework makes no difference between cannabis and other illicit drugs. And you should also know that cannabis is prohibited in France even for medical purposes. So theoretically, the penalties for cannabis and cannabis use and trafficking are among the harshest in Europe. In practice, the reality of law enforcement is flexible. So on the ground, the severity of the law goes with disparities in law enforcement. Since the 1970s, the legal regime of cannabis has been a highly debated topic. Activist groups have constantly been advocating for legal changes. More generally, cannabis issues are covered in the media on a very regular basis. We also have a significant body of reports and academic expertise that has been challenging national drug policy. And over the last couple of decades, the issue of legal change was discussed in every presidential election campaign. There also has been 6 parliamentary initiatives to reform cannabis law that were promoted mostly by the Green Party, but more recently the legal initiatives have become transpartisan. So that's an evolution that's interesting. And there were even 2 government initiatives encouraging to open the debate, but none of them went all the way to effective reform. So in 2017, we could think that France was coming closer to ending its national prohibition of cannabis, as Macron made a promise of drug reform during his presidential campaign. Nevertheless, the recent years have gone backwards to strengthening prohibition as the Department of Home Affairs took the leadership on drug issues within the government. So the latest development dates back to 2020 with a tortious 200 euros flat rate fine, which was approved by the government to punish drug use. Previously, this kind of penalty was dedicated to routine road traffic offenses. So now, what does the cannabis market look like? It has continuously been growing in France. Cannabis seizures have been soaring in the last decade. In 2022, they're representing 130 tons, including hashish and marijuana. On the market, resin remains predominant in France, which is both a transit and destination country for the hashish from Morocco. Even though historically the market has been focused on hashish rather than marijuana, that situation has been evolving in the last decade with the domestic production of marijuana, which has grown, as in many parts of Europe. And in parallel, synthetic cannabinoids are on the rise. Another fundamental change is the rise of high-strength cannabis, as you can see on this slide on the curve. Last but not least, a new phenomenon has emerged over the last 5 years. Drug-related homicides have become more common. First, they were limited to the French port city of Marseille, but now they make recurring headlines in mid-sized cities like Valence, Montpellier, Besançon, Nantes, and many others. In the past 2 weeks, we had a new wave of homicides related to drug trafficking that has relaunched the public debate on the potential benefits of legalization in France once again. So this is where we are now. In the meantime, as a public interest group, in 2019, we took the initiative of submitting a research project focused on cannabis regulations in North America, and it was accepted in France, even though there was no current intention to legalize cannabis. So we did some informative work in advance of legalization. This research project called Astracon aims to provide food for thought to policymakers in France, but also in Europe, in 2 ways. First, we are trying to assess some of the key goals of formal regulation of cannabis and give policy feedback on implementation issues as experienced by policymakers and regulators. We are also trying to understand the perceptions of market operators and cannabis industry stakeholders regarding the accomplishment of regulatory goals, the challenges they experience in the first years of regulation, and how they figure out the future of the industry locally. So in this perspective, we have set up a qualitative study with a focus on six jurisdictions in North America, mixing early adopters and later movers in the US, and three very different provinces in Canada in terms of regulation choices. We are paying special attention to policy-specific measures, price and taxation, licensing rules, and so on, and their related outcomes in a comparative perspectives. So the results are currently analyzed, and some have already been published. As a conclusion, quickly, I'd like to highlight a few points. First, the status quo is encouraged by the common reluctance to consider scientific evidence in France. There are growing public calls for an end to drug prohibition based on the policy approaches now established in Uruguay, parts of the United States and Canada. But few political leaders make a commitment in that area so far. However, some mayors and local representatives aged 40 or so in the newer generations now advocate for cannabis legalization locally, probably because they belong to a generation that has experimented cannabis more widely. One last comment on the French position regarding any legal move on cannabis. We are currently having a medical marijuana pilot program. This ongoing trial is constantly re-challenged by government policymakers, even though the end of the experiment is expected next year. In the same way, when CBD shops started to pop up in 2019, the French government was one of the leaders in the European Commission trying to prohibit CBD and classify it as a controlled substance. So for now, France appears as one of the most conservative countries in the EU, but the pace of new legal initiatives recommending a cannabis reform has accelerated, and the arguments for legalizing are evolving, now integrating economic considerations.
That was Ivana Obradovich, Deputy Director of the French Monitoring Center for Drugs and Drug Addiction, speaking at the 2023 NIDA International Forum on the topic of international cannabis policy and implications for research. And finally, a quick reminder that August 31st is International Overdose Awareness Day. Overdose Awareness Day is an annual event. It's the world's largest annual campaign to end overdose, to remember without stigma those who have died from overdose, and to acknowledge the grief of the family and friends left behind. The theme for International Overdose Awareness Day 2023 is Recognizing Those People Who Go Unseen, which is about acknowledging people in our communities who are affected by overdose but might go unseen in the crisis. You can find information about International Overdose Awareness Day at the website overdoseday.com. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Find this edition of Century along with an archive of past shows at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long.
So long. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.